Welcome to the Energizing India podcast, a program that focuses on electric mobility in India, giving a voice to this industry sector. My name is Ravin Mirchandani, and on this program, we feature conversations with key protagonists and industry leaders, creating a narrative on how to facilitate faster adoption of electric mobility in India. Range anxiety is one of the primary causes of dissonance in the minds of potential buyers of electric vehicles, and it always ends up with the same chicken and egg story. Which comes first, electric vehicles or the long-distance charging infrastructure? Fast chargers are expensive, and yet without the network, only the early adopting adventure seekers will lean towards driving an electric vehicle. Charge point operators, or put more simply, companies that invest in the infrastructure to provide EV users with the ability to charge at multiple locations, will play a very important role globally, not just in India, in facilitating the penetration of EVs to the point that they are ubiquitous in our lives. The CPO space globally is made up of either nimble and very fast-growing startups, or at the other end of the spectrum, large investments made by power utility companies to ensure they can keep or sequester this sector directly for themselves. In India, we're yet to see how this will play out, and the market is experiencing some very exciting investments right now, with over 40 small startups already operating in the country as CPOs. But will Reliance create a geo wave in this sector? Or will Adani come to dominate it soon? That's what we need to find out. Today, we explore the CPO sector in India and speak to the CEO and managing director of one of India's largest charge point operators, Texo Charge Zone. Karthikeya Hariani, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Robin. My pleasure.
Karthikeya, you have a very interesting background. You first started with L&T in Baroda, one of India's more lovable cities. From there, you moved to Europe. Stayed in Germany for a number of years, came back and became an entrepreneur yourself, focusing really on the cutting edge of green and renewable energy in India. Tell us what took you to the decision to plunge into the electric mobility sector.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Robin, for having me here. Now, between 2010 and 2018, those 7 to 8 years, I spent largely building up solar PV plants. However, somewhere in end of 2017, I realized that the next big idea could be all around electricity. Interestingly, I came across one survey by Richard Branson on LinkedIn. He said, what is one sector which has not changed much over the last 100 years? And it's going to see a huge transition, huge renaissance kind of thing, and over the next maybe another 100 years. So there are no prizes for guessing this, and it was electricity. And we at that time realized that electricity is undergoing a 3D effect. It's decentralization, decarbonization, and digitization. Yeah. Now, having learned that, it was also a time for me personally that what could be the scalable idea into the business of electricity, because over the last decade or so, we and myself and obviously our entire team, we built up a domain of power sector of electricity in terms of regulation, engineering, design, technology, and so on. And EV charging is fundamentally about electricity. It is about technology. It is about infra. So it has multifaceted approach that, you know, one will need to bring into building up EV charging networks in India or elsewhere. And that push, that how will you now want to engage with the industry, which is now going to see a transition from molecules to electrons. And that was, I would say, one of the major pull factor, I would say, for me to start, you know, and get into an early engagement in understanding the e-mobility sector globally.
Karthikeya, you're an entrepreneur, and India is not kind to entrepreneurs. I know that we were very celebratory and having gone from 147 to 99 on the global index for easiest places to do business. But the truth is, everything is against you as an entrepreneur, not only the regulatory system, the policy framework. How has that journey been as an entrepreneur in the charge point space to find success? Has it been exhilarating, frustrating? What have been the headwinds and the tailwinds for you?
For sure, entrepreneurship in India is one of the difficult choices here. And sometimes I do joke with my colleagues, fellow entrepreneurs in India, that the only certainty in our country is uncertainty. The business environment is always going to be challenging, whether you are in India or elsewhere. And for us, it was always a combination of government regulations, the challenges on the infra side, and building up the technology, building up the team from scratch. And importantly for us, one of the early decisions was to go solo. We never got engaged into a particular partnership for a tech platform. And I guess this was one of the first few important decisions that we took early on without any fear. Now, if we were to be dependent upon somebody, yeah, I don't think we'll be able to create a value for ourselves as well as for our stakeholders. And I think that what defines entrepreneurship also is to have tremendous courage, yeah, and your ability to say no to certain things which might be tempting. Yeah, today when we operate more than 1,000 plus charging points across AC charging, DC charging, battery swapping, is primarily driven by the tech processes.
So I want to stay with that theme of uncertainty that you talked about, because that's the environment that we do business in, particularly in this sector, because we are ahead of regulation, ahead of standardization, ahead of any policy framework, and having to then work with either lobbying policy to catch up or having to change a strategy to fit the policy and the regulatory framework. One of the challenges of our ecosystem in electric mobility is that the various silos don't talk to each other. You've got policy, regulatory, then you've got the power distribution sector. After that, you've got electrical, electronics, which is charge box manufacturers such as us. Then you've got charge point operators who sell the charge, bring the technology, customer acquisition. You've got OEMs who make the vehicles. You've got the battery manufacturers. Everything is working in different directions, and we have to bring all of this together. And yet everybody plays a part. So I have two questions. The first one is, for our audience and listeners, perhaps you can talk about what charge point operators bring to the table within this ecosystem, so it becomes clear. It's in the IC industry, it's the Shells or the Hindustan Petroleums or the Indian Oils. It's a radically different concept as charge point operators. So what do charge point operators bring to the table?
Yeah, Robin, I guess, as you rightly said, there are various players which forms a particular ecosystem. And just to drill it down further, we are dealing with two industries per se. One is automotive, another is power sector. A CPO can do the following. They can just say, fine, that there are third-party chargers and I'd like to connect it to our platform and offer them on our app. So through the app, an EV owner or EV driver can look at the charger, can book a slot, can make the payment and charge the vehicle. Or there could be other companies as CPOs like ChargeZone, like our own company, is to give a vertical integration, a full stack solution, where the deliverable from ChargeZone, from our company to the customer, is only energy as a service, that is EV charging as a service. In other words, we are building up fully integrated petrol pumps in the country. Yeah. So for us, obviously the fuel is electricity, the investment and the capital that we bring. So it is boiling down to our ability to raise and deploy the capex to build this EV charging network, because to the end customer, he only wants a very simple service. He wants a reliable EV charging to be done whenever or wherever he or she wants. That's a bottom line.
Karthik, today, when you look at you made a very good point, which is you're looking at two industries, automotive and electric. So let's focus on automotive for a section and then come to electric. If you look at the vehicles on the road today, this by the NHAI's own data that they put out, 330 million vehicles on the road in India today. 80% of those are two-wheelers. And of the 20, 11% are public transport, broken up into trucks and buses, and 9% are cars. So you today have 295 charging stations over 11 cities, and that constitutes AC as well as DC charging. And within the charging network, you have home charge, which is slow charge. You have destination charging, which doesn't need to be rapid. And then you have en route charging or distress charging, which needs to be fast charging. Trucks will probably take a long time to move, may move to hydrogen. Yeah. Buses will move quickly. Cars will move quickly. But that market suddenly seems very small, because you're looking at probably 15% of 330 million vehicles if all of them convert into electric over the next 5-6 years. It seems like such a small market suddenly. And there's 40 CPOs already registered in India that are chasing it. So given all of this, there needs to be a dissonant strategy to be the dominant CPO. And I'm interested in what is ChargeZone's one thing? What is ChargeZone's business plan to be the one that outshines the others?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good stat to hear and narrowing down to a particular segment of industry. Yeah. As ChargeZone, we are pretty clear on what kind of vehicles we want to serve. Now, let's say if you talk about electric scooter, so whatever that number is, obviously it's one of the biggest number in India, is one of the biggest two-wheeler market globally. However, we have decided to chase a particular vehicle segment with the intent of providing EV charging as a service, right? Now, just to give a small example, it's just a more of a, you know, back of paper calculation, saying that if Delhi were to be 30% electric by 2030, then the electricity that it consumes somewhere around 3,000 megawatt a day, so 3,000 MWHR per hour, yeah, right? In next 10 years or 9 years, it will require twice that electricity, only if 30% were electric. Now, this is a huge number to talk about. So for us, our unit of measure is not just a number of vehicles, because if we talk about number of vehicles, suddenly that market looks very narrowed down, very small. But let me talk what we deliver. Our deliverable is only one thing, and that is energy, the electricity. So our unit of measure is only kWh and not kilometers. Our deliverable is not about how many vehicles we are going to serve. Our is what kind of vehicles are being served and how much of electricity that they consume. For example, one of our early success was into electric buses. And that experience today has helped us to gain a few more customers when the buses itself from intra-city are moving towards intercity. What does it mean? It means that an average intra-city that flies within, let's say, Pune or Mumbai will consume 200 units for, let's say, 200 kilometers, because it's generally 1 unit per kilometer for bus. But for intercity, it's around 500 units per bus per day. Now, in the given bandwidth of resources and the organization that we have, and as we also scale up further, we see the multiple of electricity units being consumed, rather than saying that what percentage of market that we are serving, because market is so massive in the country. And we asked ourselves that on an average, let's say there are 100,000 diesel buses being sold a year in country, 120, 150,000, whatever that number is. Even 10%, that is 10,000 of the 10,000 electric buses are on offer, which means that the industry or a charging industry, companies like ours need to bring in $100 million in capex to solve those 10,000 electric buses for the next 10 to 12 years. Now, these numbers are humongous in nature. So at ChargeZone, we decide to build up fast DC charging networks for electric buses and electric cars in the country, while fixed charging or battery swapping in form of battery as a service for three-wheeler segment. Because that's where we found that, yes, if we got to be creating a sustainable business model, a profitable company.
Karthik, one of the beautiful benefits of electric mobility, particularly on charge and charging, is that it gives you more time in your life. Because your habits change. Typically, when you're driving an ICE vehicle, you need to go fill fuel once a week. If you're a car owner or a scooter owner, and that means on a Saturday or a Sunday morning, you're dedicating 20 minutes to drive to the fuel station, 5 to 10 minutes to fill fuel, 20 minutes back, and you usually then, do some shopping with it and things like that. And charging, you don't need to do that because charging comes to you. You can charge at home, you can charge in your office when you get there, and you need to stop at a McDonald's or a restaurant on the way for distress charging, and so you're getting two or three things done at the same time. So your quality of life, in fact, really goes up because this habit of having to put time aside to get energy can be done away with. Yet in India, it's the fuel stations that are putting electric chargers. And the model seems so radically different from what's happening in the world. So where do you see that going? Why is that happening? Why do we still want people to drive to a fuel station to charge a car? Is it because of real estate or is it that the energy people are used to getting energy in that location? So we're staying there.
Right. No, a very interesting question. No, thanks. You just made me realize that you can actually have more time for yourself. And I'm driving an EV car, bought a new one recently. And yes, I did realize now and surely that I've never gone to a fuel station for the last 2 months or so. nor my colleagues have gone. But yeah, I guess it's all about that EV charging coming to you and not you driving to the fuel station. Surely it saves a lot of valuable time, especially the time that you really need during the business hours, right? Now, coming to the charging station being talked about or being put on a petrol pump, I think it's a very early experimentation being done by various oil marketing companies in India. We call the likes of Indian Oil or HPCL, BPCL, etc. They're all marketing companies where they put up a petrol stations. There are, I think, 69,000, 70,000 odd petrol pumps in India. Now, once we started putting up the charging stations, we realized that EV charging is not going to be a 1 minute or a 5 minute affair. It is going to be a significant time. When I say significant time, it could be a 20 minute or a 30 minute or an hour or a two, which means that you need to really put up a charging station where customers will come for certain experience or certain other task or work. So we quickly boil down to a very simple idea that we are going to avoid petrol pumps. It is not a place where you would like to stay more than a minute. And thankfully, the grid is available. The distribution companies have done a brilliant job. I think over the last 10 years, India has become a power surplus in many, many areas, which means that you can actually put up a charging point wherever you want, as long as you respect the safety and installation guidelines, the Central Electricity Authority, rule book, etc. And you are there. You really do not have to go to a petrol pump now anymore for looking for a charging station.
The other point with petrol pumps is, of course, that in India you need PESO approval, the Petroleum Explosive Safety Organization, and then, of course, your charge box should be 8X certified or 8X manufactured. How do you prioritize where you want to put your charging stations? Is there a strategy you use or a formula on identifying in each city you go to the most optimal places for a charging station?
Let's put it this way, that as I said, the decision for setting up a charging station is on similar lines how you put up a petrol pump. You have to understand the density of mobility or what you call as a heat map, right? And then you take a call on how well you optimize a particular location, the number of chargers, the ratings of those chargers. Because again, the chargers, they come of various kinds. They range from all the way from 7.5 kilowatt going all the way up to 360 kilowatt nowadays. Yes? So, it's a combination, and it requires a pretty much a well-researched process here in order to determine a particular charging point or a location of a charging point. The location or the real estate equation is going to be very, very important. It's going to dominate this space subsequently, which means that while in India still there is a personal mobility and there is shared mobility, and also there is chauffeur-driven mobility as well, right? But when it comes to personal mobility, your spouse would like to drop the kids to dancing class and they want to drive somewhere, and then they need to look out for a charging point. We are looking at those kind of customers, because if you are going to solve the problem for that segment, you are actually going to solve for everybody else as well.
It's a fair comment to make. We had Reji Kumar, from the CEO from ISGF, a few months ago on the podcast, and he talked about how EV adoption in India happens in pockets. You buy an EV, your neighbor buys an EV, your street buys an EV, and so you get EV charging demand in pockets, and balancing the grid in these micro pockets where many people have suddenly started to go EV will be the issue in the short term for the grid. Also, when you look at rickshaws, it's suburb driven. You'll get an entire suburb where you might have a busty where you'll have 30 rickshaws and they all park on the street at night, and all of them will move electric at the same time, and so then there'll be demand for energy in that area again, creating that same kind of situation. So I'm interested, Karthik, what are the problems you have experienced in setting up the 295 charging stations? What are the unique issues that you have faced? And I don't mean regulatory, I mean, that's a given. I mean, infrastructure-related, service-related. What are the issues the charge zone and the team have been trying to grapple with?
Yeah, but before I move to that question, I think this regulatory issues or challenges is a very well-known topic being discussed across various forums. And I'm not surprised, Ravin, you bring up that point again here. But I think for once we have realized that both the central government and the state governments probably for the first time have set the priorities right, put it this way, as far as EV charging policies are concerned. They eliminated what you call as a license raj, right? If I have to be a DISCOM, I don't think we'll be having this podcast at all, right? Because EV charging has been eliminated from the definition of power trading.
Yes.
And I still remember 17th April and 5 p.m. that particular time and date on which Chazan was born was only after this record, because we know that there are a lot of things to do after this. But having come from power sector and having dealt with various issues in various regulatory, state regulatory commissions in the country, we realized that this one, this particular regulation, and thereafter a slew of regulations that were announced thereafter, has been, I would say, it has been very proactive and good for both central and the state governments. And the state governments bringing up the EV tariffs as a special category, as a special pricing. Remember, it is not subsidized. It is differential pricing. It is slightly expensive than the residential EV charging cost, but a lot cheaper than a commercial tariffs. Yeah. Which means, and also in my early days, when we were consulting during some of the stakeholder meeting with the government, we decided as Chazan not to take any subsidy-based program of government. We said that because the word subsidy kills the market. We have seen n number of times across various sectors in the country. It was renewable energy earlier. It was agriculture. It's still there. It has never come out of that cocoon, because suddenly you are pushing that industry players into a very, very comfort zone while announcing this. And thankfully, I would say, and I'm thankful to the government that they allowed private companies like Chazan to do business in the country. Yeah. So I think that is enough for me personally, saying that fine, this regulation is good enough and we are all sorted with that. Now, coming to the challenges now. Because as I said, this one important challenge was already out of the way. Other was all about execution. So these are all routine challenges. Now, for example, if you're putting up a factory, don't you think that you will have a number of challenges there? You will have, right from buying or identifying a land, all the way, going up with the approvals and so on. But fortunately, setting up a charging point is not a difficult job. Because once you have identified a right location, it is all about that what you call classical electrical engineering or brick and mortar work that you got to do. So as Chazan, we have seen four stack challenges out here. You got to create a power infra, whether it's LT, HT, 30 kilowatt, 100 kilowatt, or 5 megawatt, whatever. Our largest installation has a electrical or transformer capacity of 3 megawatt. Our smallest installation is not less than 50 kilowatt, for example. So we have dealt with LT and ST. Now, if you ask any electrical engineer, or even that matter, even a technician, he will tell you, in a very animated form that, fine, these are like 10 steps you got to do and so on. And fortunately, solar rooftop installation, which has happened across the country, suddenly people are talking about electricity bills. They're talking about KWH. They're talking about net metering. So there is, I would also rather thank the solar revolution, the solar rooftop revolution in the residential premises, which has engaged the consumer that earlier he was just looking at electricity bill per month. Now he's more prone to figure out that how he saves electricity, how does it work, and so on. Because electrical engineering per se, I remember some of my early classes during the university days, there was always a complaint by electrical engineers versus mechanical engineers. So we used to go to the mechanical engineering class and say, you can see the machines. Unfortunately, you can't see a magnetic field out here in electrical engineering. You can't see an electric field, and you are dealing with Maxwell equations and Gauss theorems. It's so difficult to understand. Yeah. So, but now people are talking electricity, and that's a great thing, right? Now, so having said that, I would say the challenges are routine, because we come from EPC background. I always joke that this white shirt I wear very rarely. I'm more of a blue collar worker or contractor, and for us it's a more of a run of the mill kind of process. That fine, koi bhi location hai, ye location hai, koi baat hai, hum kar lenge. If the location is right, then we can get everything right. So it reminds me of my friend who runs a restaurant business, and he always say that there are only three things in a restaurant: is location, location, and location. Because the food is a given thing. You cannot say the food is best and the location is not so good, right? It's like setting up a garage shop on a first floor; nobody's going to come, right? So that is how it's a lot of learning from other industry that we are able to bring into EV charging space.
Karthik, when you talk about growth of this sector, which is the most exciting part. You yourself, in your own calculation, said that the charging industry, charge point industry, will need $100 million in investment over the next 5 years, right, in order for us to be able to meet our targets. So I want to focus on Chazan for a bit. You founded in 2017. You've gone through your A series, I think, right now. Your first funding was from the government, from a lab I create for 50 lakhs. Subsequently, now you've got 20 crores in funding, in part by the Mumbai Angels. You had VCATs and a significant number of HNIs. which will take you through an interesting journey to your B series, C series, I expect eventually an IPO. But that 100 million number is just astounding. It's going around in my head since you mentioned it. And I want to ask you whether you think that what happened in the telecom industry could happen to the charge point industry. We had so many telecom players, different circles. You couldn't talk to each other. There's so many. It was vibrant. The prices were low as a result. And then you had this big, massive geo wave that came and cleaned up the industry. And you're down to two, really, if you think about it. And they forced mergers just to be able to compete with Jio because of the sheer investment that Reliance made. Do you think that the charge point industry will face a geo wave from Reliance or Adani or somebody else that it first cleans up the myriad of competitors in the business, but then eventually takes away the competitive spirit as well and becomes just another utility with a high price?
It's a very important point. But more than mobile telephony, I would rather compare it with the mobile tower business. Because mobile tower business are the one which we can compare with an EV charging business. All these mobile telephony guys, they came together and became and gave away their assets to this one single company to operate and manage those towers. So we see here that while the consolidation is likely to happen, but again, people who will understand electricity, people who understand the utility business here, they are more likely to come in into the space. And so at the end of the day, yes, it require mega investment. It will also require involvement of some of the large industrial or business houses in the country. But I think it will all boil down to what, one thing called execution.
So it's the month of June and we're in the middle of a big storm in Pune. We can hear the monsoon rain just outside the studio. $100 million. I'm still stuck on that number. Karthik, you're going to need a lot of funding for ChargeZone. We know that you're born global because your business model includes CMS, software as a service. You're looking overseas. Do you think that you'll be listing overseas? Is that how you will get the appetite for that kind of investment into India? Because from my experience, clearly India, the business houses might have the appetite, but investors for $100 million or $200 or $300 million is a large sum. Yes. So are your intentions eventually when you list to be overseas?
As ChargeZone, we have realized that our success is a function of number of charging points that we have in our network. Mm-hmm. Which in turn is boiled down to our ability to deploy CapEx. There are so many other elements somehow has favored us in raking up the interest amongst the consumers as well as among the investors, among the DisDoco investors and so on. And the best part is that over the last few weeks, we have seen a lot of interest by various global utility companies which are global brand names showing a lot of interest in ChargeZone. Similarly, the P house is wanting to put in the money about ChargeZone. So it is not now a question about why or what or how. It is only about when. So it can be 3 months down the line. It could be a year down the line. And there are so many multiple sources. It could be listing overseas as well as one option. It could be SPAC. It could be. So I think it's only for us, how to take up this opportunity further.
We were talking last night. You mentioned you've been to the US and you found that they are equally so early stage in their own policy deployments of electric vehicles. The whole world is, in fact, learning as we go. In your experience, what is the difference in the charge point operator sector in India versus the rest of the world?
Even the countries like US are on an early stage, yeah, because the various announcement by the automotive giants in US has just happened. Right. There's been Ford F-150, earlier there was Chevy, Volt, and so on and so forth. So it's just a beginning. Similar in Europe as well. Volkswagen just declared that MEB platform, which is very generic in nature. And now they have gone with a strategic acquisition with Northvolt, with the battery manufacturer. So they're doing a forward and backward integration all over. So I think there are even automotive OEMs are trying to sort out their strategy and their path forward as well. As much as they're also conscious of the fact that, who are these EV charging companies coming in? India is a very unique market in a lot of sense that we call it India problem, Indian solutions, right? A car in India, for example, a personal mobility in India is not more than 30 kilometers a day compared to an 80 miles an American drives for himself. And you can see there's a lot of change in EV charging requirements. If you both wear electric car, just on an apple-to-apple comparison, the EV charging requirement in US is far higher in that sense compared to an Indian on a personal mobility level. And it's not about diversity of cultures in India. It's the diversity of various, you know, EV charging services that you need to bring into this country.
Karthikey, I want to ask you a frivolous question that we ask all the guests who come on our show. It's frivolous in nature, but it gives a very pointed answer. And it always is interesting because every leader sees it from a different perspective. And the question is this. If you had the opportunity to be the Prime Minister of India for just one day, and could make any decision you wanted for the electric mobility sector in India, what would it be?
Oh, wow. A very good question, a difficult one rather, yeah. Yes, as the Prime Minister, I'll be conscious of the fact that automotive OEMs, before the e-mobility landscape started, you know, evolving or showing those, you know, green sprouts, there was a major investment done on BS6 programs. Billions of dollars have got invested, and this is one of the reasons why there is a lot of reluctance by automobile OEMs to jumpstart into EV space. But one thing I think as India we are lacking is there are not enough initiatives by automotive OEMs for the launch of new vehicles. While on the other side, it's not a chicken and egg story, the infra need to come first, right? While there is now, I think, more than 1,000 crore given to various PSUs to set up various charging points, it has been a disappointment, right? So, on an EV charging space, it will be a good idea for setting up targets for various state governments to announce the EV policies within a given time frame. It could be 6 months down the line, or where all states of India and all union territories have their EV policies in place. Encourage the PSU to engage with the private players, not necessarily under the tendering model and other things, but more on the based on the. And the preferred or a partner of choice model. So a thrust to the expansion of EV charging networks, primarily on the intercity routes and through the PSUs, can be one of the programs which can be accelerated forward. There has already been a bit of work done, but yes, there has been shortcomings there. The implementation has not been up to the mark, but we'll rather bring in some central agency. Like recently we have announced ESL as an aggregator for the electric buses and a three-wheeler program in the country. Similarly, there could be a nodal agency, you know, and maybe the Ministry of Power can work forward in setting up a nodal agency further down the line and as an independent channel to work with the EV charging companies rather than just be dependent upon the state government.
Karthikey Hariani, many, many learnings from the discussion that we had today. Thank you so much for making the time. We look forward to having you on future podcasts and discussions as well.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
I'm your host for this episode, Ravin Mirchandani. But I would not be here without the amazing Energizing India podcast team. Onkar, our podcast director and the man who makes it all happen in the end, much like a big fat grand Indian wedding, bringing together the research, data and attention to details, all in the timelines to get the next episode out on time. Srivikram, our podcast co-host and head of research, and Sunil, who along with me is executive producer of our program. The Energizing India podcast is an Ador Digitron production, giving a voice to the EV industry in India. If you enjoyed listening to us today, make sure to follow us on whatever platform you are listening on, whether it's Spotify, Apple iTunes, or our own portal, energizingindia.tv. Thank you very much, and see you on the next episode.